This is a production of Cornell University.
I now call the meeting to order at 4:34 p.m. Tuesday, April 30th. I did. First order of business, the approval of minutes for April 16th, 2003. Does anyone have a motion to amend or a motion to adopt the minutes?
Motion to adopt.
Does anybody second?
Second.
Any objections to adopting the minutes for April 16th, 2003? The minutes for April 16th has been adopted. Next, we have a presentation from Mary Beth Grant about policy 6.4. Mary Beth, you have the floor. Whoever the dean of the college is,
for staff, which will be the vice president of that unit. So if it's in Tommy Bruce's unit, it would be Tommy Bruce, a faculty member out of arts and science, it would be that dean. And then for student respondents, and this is new, it will be an appointed faculty member. And what our thought is that that faculty member might be maybe a professor who used to be hearing board review board chair, maybe somebody who has a special interest. We still have to sort that out. It'll probably be up to the president and the dean of faculty to make that point. But it'll be an appointed faculty member to do the review process. And who conducts the appeal? So when there's a review, the review is of the investigation. So the investigator provides written information to the reviewer. Both parties, both the accused person and the complainant, are willing to give the reviewer additional information if they think the investigator got something wrong. And then the reviewer is the one that actually makes the decision. But then that decision can be appealed. And when there's an appeal by a complainant, because remember both complainants and respondents get the chance to appeal, when the complainant is making the appeal, if it's a faculty member who's the respondent, it goes to the provost. If it's a staff person who is the respondent, it goes to Mary Opperman right now, VP of HR and Safety Services. And for students, respondents, if a complainant makes the appeal, it goes to Susan Murphy's position, the VP of FAS. And then there's appeals by respondents. So if a respondent thinks that the a review person got it wrong, that can be appealed for faculty and staff according to the grievance processes that they have, which is already the way it's done. And then for student respondents, it could also go to student representation.
Any questions?
So
question.
And the other thing again about the appeal is that both the accused and the respondents get to provide written information to the person who's doing the appeal. It won't be that that person will go into every, re-examine every piece of evidence. They're looking for errors to make sure that there's, that it's been all done correctly and make sure that there's appropriate balance. So these are the things that the community has already decided, and the community, meaning mostly you guys, have already decided that policy 6.4 should be the process for sexual harassment, sexual assault, or violence claims against students. That's already decided. We've already decided that we're going to be using the preponderance of evidence standard for these types of cases, and that's in fact been in place for 2 years by the decision of this body. We've already decided, again, by decision of this body for 2 years now, that there will be equivalent appeal rights both for complainants and respondents. And then last year, you all decided to incorporate the sexual assault policy into the sexual harassment policy to get it processed. So what philosophy we're still looking at, and hope will be part of the discussion. So some topic ideas for a robust conversation. So first of all, if as you all are reviewing the process, you think of ideas to help it run more smoothly, please let us know. We're always trying to make sure that things run really smoothly for everybody involved. Suggestions about fairness, if you identify something that could be more fair, something that we really spent a lot of time over the last 9 months that we've been trying to do it. We added some things that came from the code, from 6.4, really trying to make sure that it's a very fair process. Any thoughts about the language that's been chosen? We've really thought hard about what our choices were, saying that there might be things that we missed. And obviously, any strategies you all have for communicating all of this to the broader community. You all are probably the most well-informed of the Cornell community, and we want to make sure that others in the community also have that level of knowledge and understanding about this. And any other thoughts that you have? So how did I do? Did I get through that fast? Good for me. So we want to take a few minutes for questions. I don't know exactly where we are with time.
We have about 5 minutes for questions. If you have any concerns, there is a website, Title IX, at cornell.edu, that you can submit your concerns in written form to their website. Is there any questions for the assembly? Jen?
Yes.
Mary Beth, I believe the last I was told, the this was on the docket for the May policy advisory group.
That's what I understand. May 20th, life is delivery.
Okay. That is the point. So I am the University Assembly's representative on the policy advisory group. I need to know whether I am objecting, abstaining, or approving when, at the end of that meeting, they say, here's our new policy, 6.4. So do any of the assemblies have objections? Since this is our last meeting, I feel like you guys are going to probably be forced into an executive session to tell me what my guidance is and how I need to put it. I will say in my draft, in reading the draft guidance, I don't think there's anything that hasn't been resolved by the assembly that I'm aware of as an objection. But I will need formal guidance before the May meeting on whether I need to register something in the meeting or not.
Okay. Should we ask that then? Does anybody in the assembly have any objections to adopting 6.4? I hear none. Jim, you have the UA's approval.
Unless something comes up drastically changing the policy that I've seen, I will obviously inform you the outcome of that. She's very cordial.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Mary Beth.
Thank you
very much. Next, we have Joseph Lally for parking rate and changes making a presentation. Is Joe? All right. We'll move on to reports from the assemblies from the executive board.
I would like to move to suspend the reports of the assemblies and for the assembly leaders to put that in a written email to the UA membership in the interest of time.
There's a second for this motion. Anybody opposed to the motion to submit a report from the assemblies in written form? I hear none. Moving on to old business. First, we have Resolution 13, calling for the Disassociation of Public Safety Advisory Committee from the UA. We have discussed this at the last meeting. Does anybody from the assembly have any questions or concerns about this resolution? Is there a motion to vote on this resolution?
And I should point out that we have guests from the Ombudsman's Office here today, as well as the Daily Sun and other on-campus agencies. So if there's any questions, the Ombudsman's Office is also here, and Kathy's one is here.
Right. 13th is about PSAs. Mitch.
I'm trying to remember. I know I can't find it in a minute, but I read them. What was our, why did you want to put Resolution 13? Why did you table that?
The reason why this particular resolution was tabled for today is because we did not provide adequate public notice about the resolution prior to the meeting.
No problem. Any other discussion for the assembly? Is there a motion to vote on this resolution? Anybody second this motion? Voting on Resolution 13. All in favor? All that opposed? 0. All that abstain? Resolution 13 has been passed, 12-0. Next, we have Resolution 15, calling for adopting the Cornell University guidelines for the Office of the Ombudsman. We have also discussed this resolution at the last meeting. Is there any other discussion on the floor from the assembly? Yes, Bob.
Yeah, maybe I don't understand the word, but in the new version, there's no investigation stated as being conducted, I suppose you'd say. I'm a little confused about that, because how do you get information, or do you don't want information, or could you just relate on that a little?
Sure, I appreciate the question. So, as ombudsmen, and according to our tenets, we're informal, confidential, neutral, and independent. So, as an informal entity, we're not decision makers, and we don't conduct formal investigations. So, when someone comes to see us and they have a difficulty, whatever their situation, we're trying to help them. We're not conducting some kind of investigation to figure out the veracity of their issues. We're just trying to help them with whatever their issues are.
So in order to help the person, isn't it necessary that you have knowledge about not just what they say, but generally, and you can go and talk to anyone on campus, right?
No, well, we would never talk to anyone without the person waiving confidentiality and explicitly asking us to find out information. And even before doing that, we generally explore with the person whether it would be in their best interest to try to figure it out themselves and to try to help them with that.
Okay. So investigation, though, you use a so modifier to investigate.
Yeah, when we say investigation, it's not investigation. We have to lie. In other words, we're not trying to take sides, figure out what's right or wrong. We're trying to help the person with their particular difficulty.
Okay. To my mind, it's to some extent an investigation in terms of you're making a judgment about the presentation of the person, you know, and how you could help them depends on what you think.
Well, it depends on the kind of employment situation, what the particular HR policy is for the client, and so we would, you know, tell them what it is, walk the person through it depending on their knowledge. If they didn't understand what they were being told, we can sort of help with that. But we're not investigating and finding out the truthfulness and which side is right or wrong.
Okay.
We're not decision making. Maybe
I just add to that. That with an investigation, a lot of times at the end of an investigation, there's a decision or something that comes out of an investigation that then gets publicized. That's also something that our office wouldn't do. In a sense, think about it as the person who comes to see us having the ownership over their problem, and if they choose to do something about it, it's up to them. If they decide they want to sit on it, it's up to them, except for some exceptions that are also spelled out in accordance with our principles. But when I think investigation, as Linda said, talking to a bunch of different people and finding out the truth of a situation, that's not the work we do. And we also wouldn't, at the end of that, have an outcome. It would be up to the person to decide what they want to do with their problem or their concern.
So I'll give you an example. So we just heard an informative presentation about 6.4. Say someone came to talk to us about something along those lines. We would tell them about 6.4 and whether they need to go to, if they wanted to make a formal complaint, telling them what how to do it, who to talk to, whether depending on their constituency, whether Alan or Mary Beth, that they would go to, or the faculty, who they would go to, we would explain the process and the options. But we're not, and then, as you heard, quite an investigation with respect to that process. Three levels of appeals and so on and so forth. We're not doing that investigation. That's not our function. And we're not deciding whether when the person tells us about their particular difficulty, whether that meets the preponderance standard or not. It's not up to us as a judge. We're here to, as part of Cornell Parent Community, to try to figure out the various informal and formal options that they might want to use depending on their wishes.
Okay.
Is that
okay? Yep. No, that's a quarter of an investigation.
Well, I think anytime you have an informative conversation, when students ask me about such and such, if you're having an informative conversation, I guess that's an investigation.
I need to call the question.
The question has been called. Anybody opposed to voting on this resolution? I hear none.
That requires a second.
Sorry, second. There's a second to the motion. Does anybody object to voting on this resolution? Voting on resolution 15, all in favor? All that opposed?
Zero.
All that abstain?
Zero.
Resolution 15 has been passed, 13-0-0. Next, we move on to resolution 16. Appointment. Yes.
So, at this time, would we post the new guidelines, or I think they don't go to the
final resolution? Right, that's the first new resolution.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then, so you still don't let us know.
Yes. Yes, and thank you so much for coming to answer our questions.
Thank you. Moving on to Resolution 16, appointment of University Hearing and Review Board members for the year of 2013. So the resolution has been distributed to the University Assembly members. We will, does anybody oppose to approving this as a slate? I hear none. Anybody motion to vote on Resolution 16? Bob, anybody second this motion? Voting on Resolution 16, all in favor? Well, 13. Please keep your name slate up for a little longer. 2, 4, 6, 8, 13. All that opposed? Zero. All that abstain? Zero. Resolution 16 has been passed, 13-0-0. Next, we move on to Resolution 10, resolution to modify campus code to clarify the right of complainants to appeal summary decision agreement.
I motion to limit debate to 2 minutes per person.
Anybody second that motion? All that opposed, limiting the speaker's time to 2 minutes per speaker? I hear none. The time limit for each speaker is set at 2 minutes. Greg, would you like to head this debate?
So a little bit about what this does, and if I can, I just I haven't got a card written down, so I just want to read from here. It really does four things, and this was done on the request of Mayor Grant in the JA's office. We worked closely with the JCC to come up with a mutually agreeable presentation that you have here before you. It reorders some of the paragraphs to flow a little bit more logically and just read a little better. It increases the amount of time for the JAO to notify complainants and for complainants to respond to decrease the likelihood of error on the part of the JA's office and allow adequate time for the complainant to seek an advisor and compose an appeal. This is balanced with finality for the accused so he or she knows there's a point in which the agreement may not be appealed. So the person can sort of bring closure to the situation. That was something we felt was important, so it wasn't always sort of hanging out there, when is this going to be done and over with. It clarifies the rights of appeal apply only to individual complainants and not institutional complainants. An institutional complaint would be the audit office, residential programs, some sort of institutional complaint. And it also provides more flexibility to the board, the hearing board, to accept, reject some, but not all, and different portions. So it allows to sort of pick and choose from the summary decision as opposed to having to reject in its entirety. That's essentially the gist of it. It's a little bit more of an administrative sort of housekeeping cleanup than any thing that's really sort of substantive. So I'll put the questions if you have one.
The speakers list is now open for the first round of speakers. Jim?
Madam Speaker, I rise in support of this resolution. I would let you know that the CJC had many meetings on it. We heard what we believe to be all the stakeholders. There was a very broad-based agreement with these each one of these is more complex if you get into these, but this does no harm. It does clarify things. It does solve some problems that were there without changing really anybody's rights under the code, so to speak. And I request that the assembly approve it after if there's nothing new comes into evidence based on the discussion.
Thank you, Jim. Is there any other speakers that wish to speak? Is there a motion to vote on this resolution? Is there a second? Voting on resolution 10. All in favor? Thirteen. All that opposed? Zero. All that abstain? Zero. Resolution 10 has been passed 13-0-0. Next, we move to Resolution 9, Resolution to Clarify Responsible Free Expression in the Campus Code of Conduct. We have outside speakers who requested to speak on Resolution 9. We ask that these speakers are allowed to be speak after the first round of speakers have spoken from the University Assembly. They are given a time of 1 minute each to express their concerns. So any member could call the question at any point, but we wish that members will respect these community members and allow them to speak their part before calling the question.
I motion to limit debate to 1 minute per person. Or 2 minutes. 2 minutes per person.
The motion is to limit the discussion time to 2 minutes per UA member. Is there a second? Any oppositions to this motion? I hear none. The debate has been limited to 2 minutes per speaker. So, Randy or Greg, would somebody like to start up the conversation for Resolution 9?
All right, so this is one that I feel that the CJC has really spent a lot of time on. We've tried to very much engage members from the community, put it out there for public comment, and really try to make a good, sound decision based on what's written in the code, and try to affect change to bring clarity to the code. One of the things I want to throw out there first and foremost is one of the significant changes is making sure that it's a very definitive statement that says no university permit is required for such outdoor activities. Contrary to whatever source you go to your information, it is very clear in here that no permit is required for an outdoor picket, march, rally, and other demonstrations. I think it's very clear. I think that it will provide some clarity. There's a part in here which probably will come up for discussion, so I'll put it out there now. There's a section 21 or 2021.2. We say even when not required, event organizers may submit a university's property form. I think it was the sense of the majority of the committee that this is good to suggest that the appropriate folks are notified of certain things to protect the safety and welfare of both the community, members engaging in these activities, and things like that in general. So that's why that went in there, because we wanted folks to know that there were ways to notify the appropriate folks about how to hold events that are safe and conducive to making sure that university functions continue. So that's why that language is left in there. And if I have any time left, I'll give my time to Randy.
Speakers, time has expired. The speaker list is now open. Randy?
In order to have two groups that have opposing views be able to speak at the same time, the new changes also emphasize that the presence of a counter protest does not itself constitute a disruption to university functions or unauthorized events. And
if somebody feels that their ability to express themselves freely may require some assistance, then they can get a permit. And there'll be event managers or police to help ensure that their message will get out. So not only do we want to promote free speech, which everybody in the room did with us, but promote any side to be able to speak on any issue.
Thank you, Randy. Mitch?
I would like to likely include a resolve clause in line 1 that just says resolve the following changes to be made to the code unit, additions folded, and deletions of palatine. Just like the note we sent, I read this earlier today and had absolutely no idea what to do.
The amended, the proposed amendment is to add addition, then, sorry, I was.
Addition folded and deletion italicized.
Yes. Basically, a reformat of the first resolve clause. Is there any opposition to this amendment? This amendment has been passed. Any further discussions? Now we will move on to speakers list for the second round. Community members, would you like to speak? You will be on the first speaker list.
So as many of you know, there's a faculty senate meeting that is investigating the whole project and anybody who needs to comfortable with this discussion. That committee is about to report out in a week, each time. They have met with conducted nearly 20 interviews, met with the police officers, met with all the faculty members who were at the site, met with the event managers, the participants on both sides, and they come to very conclusions. I'm not really telling you the issues that they want to take on the planet before the community first. They have established a detailed timeline, they've got a more nuanced report than Mingles, and they have a recommendation. And so in that sense, I think that this discussion is premature. It seems to me as though we're sort of rushing to get this out. Whereas I think a little bit more deliberation would help, but I don't see anything that will be hurt by waiting until the fall to do this.
Thank you, Dean Burns. Before the end of the semester, the general UA body will not be meeting. I don't think we'll be meeting before the end of the semester.
This is the last meeting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's
the last meeting.
The speakers list for round 2 has been open. Is there any community members that wants to be on the speaker list at this point?
We are.
Here
we are. We're the
yes.
People who wrote you in the staff.
Yes.
So
can I get your names, please?
I'm Rachel Wild.
Risa,
R-I-S-A,
I just need to call you.
Okay.
Anybody else?
Charlie Evans.
Anyone else?
And Charlie Davis.
Charlie Davis. And anyone else?
Alright, now we're going to proceed to speaker list 2. We're going to start with Greg.
So,
I speak now?
Huh?
The community membership and speaker.
They requested to be on the speaker's list first before they did.
But,
okay. We'll let the community members go first. Rachel?
Okay, thanks. I'm Rachel Weil. I'm an associate professor in the history department and a member of the CJC. I also created a handout for you that attempts to show you what these revisions to the code would look like in the context of the code. I voted against this proposal largely on grounds that I find it confusing, and I'd like to explain why. I had hoped that the CJC would clarify the code in a way that robustly upheld the right to free expression by demonstrators, including the right to demonstrate without a permit and to counter-demonstrate, that is, to demonstrate in the presence of another event going on campus. I believe that many members of the CJC think that that is what they have created in this proposal. It is certainly true that this proposal in some way does uphold the rights of counter-demonstrators. It declares that no permit is needed and that counter-demonstrations per se are not disturbing.
Sorry, Rachel. The speaker's time has expired. I know that 1 minute isn't a lot of time to speak. All right. There's a motion to extend time. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any opposition to, by how much?
I motion to have any speaker who is on the speaker's list to have 2 minutes to speak.
The motion is to have the speakers to have 2 minutes to speak. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any opposition to having the speakers have 2 minutes to speak? I hear none. We will now continue on with Rachel. You have one more minute.
Thanks. If I were organizing a counter-demonstration, I'd be confused about my rights. The section of the code that's revised by the proposal, that is 3B3, is inserted into a code that contains an assertion in Title 3B1 that free expression must comply with reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions as are consistent with this article and may be authorized by the president. There is another article punishing me if I don't do that. In addition, although it says that counter-demonstrations per se do not constitute a disruption, the phrase per se leaves me wondering if there's something that I would do as a counter-demonstrator that would be seen as constituting a disruption. In addition, I am encouraged or told that I may apply for a UUP permit. At the same time, it is not clear to me why I should apply for the UUP permit or whether I would suffer consequences by not having this permit. Therefore, I agree with the Dean of Faculty that the UA should look at this proposal very carefully, receive comments, and not rush into a decision that, to me, would result in something that doesn't really clarify anything. Thanks.
Thank you, Rachel. Next, we have Risa.
Can I get 2 minutes ahead of time?
Yes.
Okay.
As a clarification, all current speakers have 2 minutes to speak, and if your time is up, members of the UA can motion to extend your time.
Okay, great. Thanks. I'm just going to move over here so I can actually look at everybody. Don't stop the clock.
Okay.
All right, thanks so much for having us here from the community. In the interest of time, I just want to say first that I agree with Rachel's comments and other critiques of the substance of the proposal being flawed. We certainly have consensus around having no permit is a good thing, but creating a potential backdoor for the UUP is kind of a flaw. But what I want to say is I think this demonstrates just how important and complex the issues are to ensure full freedom of speech and correspondingly the full public discussion and debate, which we haven't had. And in fact, the procedures so far violate the University Assembly's charter and bylaws. And so I think it's inappropriate to vote at this time. It's premature to vote until we have that compliance with bylaws and the charter. As Dean Burns said, it's premature until we hear from the faculty who's been investigating committee reports. And I want to just point out to you the University Assembly Charter in 3. Make sure I've got all my things here. In 3.11, the Assembly responsibilities discusses to the extent practical and appropriate, the Assembly shall provide public notice of either the terms or the substance of each proposed recommendation or resolution. and a meaningful opportunity for community participation, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I would just note first that the April 30th agenda for the UN meeting was not posted on the UN website, so there's no public notice of the agenda for this meeting. Certainly, even though this provision says to the extent practical and appropriate, certainly that doesn't contemplate no notice, no public comment period, and no public hearing for the UA. 3.1.3 policies and actions subject to assembly review, states that for the campus code of conduct, there's a recognition of the need for one calendar month for university assembly review and response.
The speaker's time has expired. Is there a motion to extend? By how much?
Whatever.
I move motion to extend by 1 minute, 30 seconds.
I say whatever. That was my motion.
We need a time. 5 minutes.
Second.
Is there any opposition to extending the speaker's time by 5 minutes? Okay. We will now vote on this motion to extend the time by 5 minutes. All in favor? Nine. All opposed? We need two-thirds. Abstain? Abstentions? Zero?
One.
Sorry, Dad. I don't think that passed. Did that pass? Oh, wait, it did. Okay.
9 out of 15. That's less than two-thirds, isn't it?
Yeah, that is, actually.
That's less than two-thirds, isn't it?
That's less than two-thirds. The motion is now passed to extend the speaker's time by 5 minutes. Is there a second motion?
Motion to extend by 2 minutes?
3 minutes.
Well, you guys need to make the motion on the table is to extend the time by 2 minutes. Is there a second for this motion? Seconded. All that opposed to extending the time anybody opposed to extending the time by 2 minutes? I hear none. Speaker, you have 2 more minutes to speak.
Okay, thanks. So as I was saying, 3.1.3 of the Charter of the University Assembly recognizes that for the changes in the campus code of conduct, there's a need for one calendar month for the University Assembly to review and respond to it. Again, it says where circumstances permit, but again, this doesn't contemplate virtually no time for review. That is between Friday, past Friday, when the CJC voted, and Tuesday of April 30th. And I would note that the proposal in front of you for the University Assembly is not the same as what was posted for comment as Proposal B for the CJC. And as you just heard, members of the University Assembly didn't even have information about what the noted deletions and additions on what you looked at, so it's hard for me to understand how everybody could have been clear on it. I'll also note the University Assembly bylaws and the normative procedures state that the CJC should, to the extent practical and appropriate, have a public comment period of at least 2 weeks. This does not contemplate, there's no exigency for such a short period, and so rushing to finish before this meeting today is not an exigency, as other people have pointed out, at the expense of a full comment period. I just say to end here, close, this is about free speech. All right, we are all colleagues here on this campus who are devoted to the principle of free speech. There is no reason to do this prematurely. Why not actually follow the bylaws and the University Assembly Charter? In fact, of course, you're obligated to do that. You haven't done it, and it seems to me that you should not vote on this proposal today. Thank you.
Thank you, Risa. Next, we have Darlene Evans.
Yes, Dan, thanks for letting us speak today. Last November, I witnessed a lawful protest by students under campus code guidelines. Other students who had secured a permit in order to preempt that rally called the police on the basis of their permit, and that resulted in the campus police coming and harassing student protesters, bullying me in particular, and other faculty members who simply asked them to honor student freedom of speech. I was one of the faculty members. Now, Proposal B presented by the CJC tacitly allows the same thing to happen again. And what I heard by member, I think Randy, you don't need a permit according to this proposal, but if you want protection, file for a permit, which seems to me it's going to allow the same kind of situation if people with a permit are the protected ones and people without a permit are not protected. So I urge the University Assembly to reject that proposal, uphold the current campus code that really served the campus well until it was assaulted by students in November who were exploiting the permit procedure. That can't happen again. So I think it's hard to know that my complaint on behalf of freedom of speech actually resulted in a further restriction of freedom of speech by this proposal. And if you want to resist it again, at least please wait until after the Faculty Senate Committee has continued their deliberations and finished them and presented them so that can be heard. The President's report didn't reflect my narrative to that committee. So please, I urge you to wait for the Faculty Senate Committee before you vote on this issue.
Thank you, Darlene. Next we have Charlie Davis.
I'd like to just reiterate what Darlene said about waiting for the Faculty Senate's investigation results. I was one of the colleagues here, Meredith, and I wrote to you a letter from the NLG stating the very concerns. I'd also like to just introduce myself a little bit. I'm a third-year law student at Cornell. I've had a long history here at Cornell. I graduated from the IR school. I worked for Alumni Affairs and Development. I'm now a third-year law student. I really, really, really like this place. You know, I've had a large stake in this community, and one of the most meaningful aspects is the cohesion that I've seen among alumni and students of campus-wide events. You know, being able to play on the lawns or be able to, like, rally together for some common cause. And, you know, the absence of or the ability to go speak freely is very important. It's a fundamental part of the public mission of the university, regardless of students. But I just would like to ask that there, emphasize there's no need to rush this discussion. The triggering events for this discussion were the events of November of 2012. After a full and robust investigation of those events would be, I think, very helpful to know precisely what to target, what issues to target for the changes in policy. And one of the issues that was reported is that one group was asked to leave despite being on the plaza first. And the counter protest had a permit that they were allowed to stay. So in effect, they were able to push off the other group with the help of law enforcement. That seems to be a very large issue that the current proposal doesn't really address. Yes, it says no permit is required, but it allows for the permit process to still be in place. And so it still enables the side on the, if you waited for the results of the faculty investigation, perhaps a more targeted restriction in the code could be put in place. The other thing that the proposal does not discuss are the...
I motion to extend time by 2 minutes. Any oppositions to the proposed motion? I hear none. Your time has been extended by 2 minutes.
Thank you. So I guess one of the other aspects of the proposal. Okay. So the Faculty Senate, as far as I'm aware, has asked various students and faculty members who are somehow absent from the official report by the university. The official investigation by General Counsel did not include, did not discuss the students who are involved in the events of the November 2012 protest. So that was one significant lack that I think perhaps not modified but affected the President's strong recommendation to have these changes to the proposal to the campus code of conduct in place. So the Faculty Senate took it upon themselves to fill those gaps and create their own investigation by talking to community members, by talking to the faculty who felt that they were misrepresented or mischaracterized in the reports to the General Counsel investigation. It would be such a shame to see all of these relevant
and pertinent voices in the community be, you know, fall out from the corporate code of conduct in their proposed media. Additionally, you know, just I'm happy to answer any questions you might have about the letter that we have submitted, so I'd like to
thank you. Next we have Matt. Bless you. Next we have Max.
So I very much agree that we should delay, or I would ask you guys to delay any changes whatsoever to the campus code, because I think that you lack a full knowledge of what exactly occurred and what precipitated this entire conversation. I don't think you can have an accurate sense of what procedures need to change until you have an accurate sense of how exactly those procedures broke down. But of course, here we are, and so I will talk a little bit about this issue. I do think there's various provisions in the new campus code. One can say that, yes, it allows counter demonstrations and says permits shouldn't be an obstacle to that. But at the same time, I think we have to think about how this is going to be interpreted by the people responsible for enforcing the code on this campus. And I think we got some foretaste of that. I mean, we've heard from several people that there is it would be good to get a permit before carrying out any demonstration. Someone from the administration already said, yes, I would recommend, instead of another campus newspaper today, yes, I would recommend to any student group that I'm advising that they get a permit before carrying out a demonstration. So what does this tell you? I mean, this tells you, I think, very clearly and very bluntly that there is a presumption implicitly being built in, both as a function of how it's written and, of course, how a common person is going to interpret the resolution, that you do need a permit. And again, we know how that's going to work out. If someone can get a permit and gets a permit, then they're going to use that permit to preempt someone else's right to legitimately protest. I think this is extremely problematic. I also think the rhetoric that's been raised about maintaining a safe environment for students to exercise their free speech, or that students need to be encouraged to learn how to exercise free speech. You know, if the person who actually organized this protest and was threatened with arrest by the campus police and saw my friend thrown to the ground, a female student here, I find this rhetoric frankly appalling. We organized a very civil protest with the orientation that we wanted to speak to the campus. And then we're told that we need to be controlled, but in fact it was the presence.
I motion to extend time by 2 minutes.
Second. The motion is to extend the time by 2 minutes. Anybody opposed to this motion? Voting on the motion to extend time by 2 minutes. All in favor? Nine. All opposed? Three. All abstain? The motion has not been passed. Is there an alternative motion on the floor?
Give him 1 minute at least.
Is that a motion?
Yeah.
No. The motion did not pass.
Oh.
2/3.
It's 2/3 vote to extend time. There's 15.
The motion on the floor is to extend time by 1 minute.
Is there a second for the motion on the floor?
Nine out of 15.
Out of the people who voted, not of the people.
No, it's 2/3 of present.
Yeah.
2/3 of members present.
Okay, maybe we can't do basic math. I'm pretty sure that is 2/3. Somebody make a motion.
Peter made the...
Peter, what's the motion?
Time for 1 minute. Is that enough?
90 seconds. Thank you. Second. Anybody opposed to this motion? I hear none. Does the speaker have 90 seconds?
Thank you very much. Thank you, guys. As Lisa has affirmed, I mean, I think the fundamental principle should be allowing students to exercise free speech until such time as exercising this principle has turned into a dangerous situation for the community. I mean, clearly this is not the case, and not only is this not the case, but the opposite is the case, is that people trying to intervene and supervise so-called our expression of free speech and our free political action on campus actually precipitated a dangerous situation. I mean, this is something we absolutely have to reckon with. And I just want to make a final point that there's no need to make this an ideological issue, but there is a point that students finally have the right to protest administration policy. This is something we have a right to do at a university in a civil way, oriented towards people in the democratic public sphere. I think this is absolutely fundamental. And the fact is, the people who are trying to impose a rigid control of freedom of speech will use that control to shrink the space of freedom of speech and reasonable, calm, and civil political dissent. And I think that's antithetical to what we're actually at university for and really what we're on the planet for. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Max. Next, we have Mitch.
I just want to thank you to the community members that are here. I just want to quick ask Greg, I guess, about the timeline of comment period.
So the comment period, I don't have the exact dates in front of me. I'm sure they're probably more, whatever. So they went out, Ari, can you help recall? The 26th. Sorry, I don't have my calendar in front of me. And it was sent to our Friday meeting, which was last Friday. At noon, we closed that comment period on the two proposed resolutions, and then we went into discussions, deliberations, and now you have the proposal in front of you.
I'm sorry, it went out on the 23rd, and then we had our
23rd and then the 25th, yeah.
Randy, you could be on the speakers.
Can I yield the rest of my time to Randy?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I can too, but I'll
wait. Can you yield it to me?
Point of clarification.
I just want to say that probably around 3 months ago, we started the email. It wasn't formal, there wasn't a resolution to have email conversation to discuss this resolution. But in fact, that's what it was. We had an informal conversation that this resolution was going to come up. Anybody that's interested in communicating any thoughts to anybody else, certainly to do it. Many of you know because you were copied on all those UA resolutions. There were a lot of voices. Everybody has been aware that the university assembly was looking at the campus code. There's been certain, what I think would be misinformation, that said we're going to do the president's bidding no matter what. I don't think we did that at all. I think there's certain misinformation that...
I move to extend time by 1 minute.
Second.
The proposed motion is to extend time by 1 minute. Is there any opposition to that motion? I hear none. Randy, have 1 minute.
Certain misinformation that people want permits, just want permits. If there's any spontaneous demonstration, it doesn't require permits. There's no time to get a permit. There's no requirement for a permit. But if you want to plan a space, so you can put forth your views, you can get a permit. You don't have to get a permit. You can weigh the options, the pluses and minuses, and you can get a permit or not. Nobody's trying to insist on a permit. If Ari was the advisor to a group, he'd recommend it. If I were advisor to the group, I'd say, here's your option. You may want to get a permit for certain reasons. You may not want to get a permit for certain reasons. Okay.
Before...
In light of the ways that speakers' times have been going, I motion to amend and make it so that everybody has 3 minutes to speak on the speaker's list.
Second.
The proposed motion is to extend time for every speaker to 3 minutes. Any opposition to this motion? I hear none. Every speaker now have 3 minutes. Before moving on with the speaker's list, I would like to clarify that you can yield the remaining time of your, speech to any member, or you can yield it to any member sitting in the room right now. for example. Yes.
The point of clarification is that some people suggested that the timelines for the review of this issue, there seems to be one in particular that discussion or involves the community time granted review, some sort of month. Is the process that you're suggesting that you guys carried out with the JPC for involvement of the public in the review of this issue adequate in terms of meeting the guidelines that were noted by the previous speaker?
Question of privilege. I'm not sure if this is a point of clarification so much as it is a...
Because if it's true, then...
No, it's relating to the content of the day as opposed to a procedural matter, mm-hmm. So it's not a point of clarification.
Well,
would you like...
Well, whatever you want to call
well, Rob, I could place you onto the speaker's list if you wish to speak.
The reason why we're trying to adhere to the Robert's Rules of mm-hmm. Order so that everybody has equal time and equal ability
right.
to
but
speak.
I'm just asking whether or not... I mean, I'm not sure, but if there are procedural mm-hmm. issues, doesn't that sort of...
I think the question is, did we follow the procedures or not?
If we
yes
did follow
or no,
rules,
that is
then we can have a discussion, but we may actually have more time. That's all I'm trying to understand. Thank you.
I can speak
yes,
to that
sorry.
If you want to. I believe the committee followed the procedure. As was said, there are several recommended procedures. There are several strong recommendations. Some of them were set aside. In particular, the length of the comment period was set aside in order to produce a proposal that could be brought to this meeting. I do also want to note that proposals into which the current proposal or from which it was derived have been in discussion by the committee for several months.
Which is why it took actually a long time to get a proposal, because there wasn't a resolution.
All right, we'll now go back to a speaker's list. We have Greg, then Dean Burns, then Peter.
I wanted to respond to something, Joe, that you mentioned earlier about the Federal Senate Committee, and I think one of the interesting things to point out is there's three members, I think it's Rick, Bill, and Margaret of the faculty that are on this committee. They never once showed up to a TJC meeting. They're not here today. If this was such a big issue for them, why would they not engage in the process that's able to influence changing of the code when they knew we were having these discussions? Why would they not want a seat at the table? Why would they not want the opportunity to provide if they've done some investigation and they know that based on the charter of the university, it's not the faculty senate's recommendation that changes the code. It's the university assembly, and that's based on information that comes out of the CJC. So I guess what I'm perplexed at is if there's this intense desire by the faculty to have their voices heard, why didn't they pull up a seat to the table and have their voices heard? Because these are three capable people who probably have a lot of information that they could have shared in this process, but chose to hold it because they want this grand reveal to the Faculty Senate, when actually the Faculty Senate is not the body that influences the change for the code. So I'm just wondering where they are, where they've been, and why aren't they speaking up if there's this revelation of information that they're sitting on? Why do we have to wait for a written report?
Yes.
My time's done.
All right. Amber.
I don't want this to come away from my time, but
yeah.
Keep in mind that the faculty senate asked for a report. I think these people decided they wanted to finish that report. They've taken 20 interviews, and we said these people have a lot on their plate. They do have a lot on their plate, and they're busy people. And they finished their interviews about 10 years ago. They sit down and write, oh, I've got a panel report in. I've got to Washington for an NSF panel. I'm out of town for 10 days. Back. And so it's busy contract. These people certainly have been corresponding with me, and they are trying to put their nuanced views without or with waiting until all the information is. That is true. And I think I was blindsided a little bit that the University Assembly ends on April 30th. We keep going. We've got a couple more faculty in the center. Where's the lead speaker?
Next, we move on to Dean Burns to your regular speaking privileges.
I just had 2 points I wanted to make. One is just the fact that I think it's generally agreed that the whole plaza incident was mishandled. I think people on the right, the left side, people in the middle, everybody around the table, something's mishandled. That doesn't necessarily mean that stuff that's on the table here has to go in, or the rules have to change at all. We should know that. I mean, we have to really understand this in a better way. Just because errors were made 3 months ago, 4 months ago, out in front of the street, doesn't mean you have to change rules. You have to do it now. So that's one point. Second point is, you know, there's lots of discussion about the meanings of various words, and I think a lot of us are confused. I'm just reading the last new insert here, and I'm confused. And it says, even when not required, the next word is med. What's made? Made to med. We use, of course, in the topic of form, to ensure they are informed. Who's they? Is it the government? Is it the president? Is it the who are they? So it just seems like, you know, we don't know what this is saying, and yet we're being asked to go on. So I, again, urge you to wait until we have more information, we have more time, and the community has a better opportunity to work and their voice for
thank you. Peter?
I have a point of information before my speaking time begins. First, point of information is, what if we do not vote on this today, what happens?
We will motion to table the discussion on this resolution, and it will be brought up at the next...
If it's not dealt with at the end of the semester, it starts over again. So okay. A new resolution would need to be introduced next semester, and the new CJC would need to re-vet it.
No, well, I'm not perfectly clear, so I don't perfectly understand it. So if we don't vote on it today, it will just go back to the CJC, the new CJC.
No, no. There will be no
resolution.
So can't a committee member reintroduce it?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
If they choose to, so I really don't see that as a big brick wall for us to vote on this.
Well, just a clarification. If it was reintroduced in the next university assembly, it would have to be recommitted to the Chosen Judicial Committee, reheard, re-commented by that committee, and then brought again to the university assembly.
And then my second point of information is, how can we get a community member's back on the speaker's list if they want to speak?
A university assembly member could yield their time or speaking privileges to a community member. Yep. Ari.
There's a vague provision in the bylaws, but the way we interpreted it was with unanimous consent, any person can be given a grant of time regardless of the speaker's list, as long as somebody moves to put them on.
And so let me take a quick pause, and then I want to hear something. So I'm on the CDC, and I've seen every provision of every new proposal for the campus code of conduct, and I don't really understand that this current one is being proposed, and I personally would love to wait to hear from the faculty senate's report, and I don't think that we followed our duties and our bylaws for our community so that they can understand what's going on here in 401, and I don't think we should vote on it today, and I will probably be making a motion to table it later on, I want to give my time to Professor Leibowitz.
Thanks. Can I?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on what Peter said. I haven't heard anything on the procedural errors as I saw them, that the meeting agenda for today was not posted on the University Assembly website. I happen to be on the listserv, so I got it. Otherwise, community members would not know about it, and there's no way that you could have people coming and participate unless they happen to have known about it. It seems to me that is a really fatal flaw if you actually want people to have this discussion. And from what we're hearing, also, the 3 days for a formal public comment period for the CJC simply doesn't even approach the 2 weeks, particularly
when you've got the kind of ambiguities that we've just simply been hearing about around the room, where people are saying, well, what does this mean? I don't know what this means. That tells us ambiguities result when you try to do things in a hurry and get something done because the 30th was this kind of deadline. That's not going to improve the code. It's going to weigh it down. Seems to me there's a very positive consensus that's starting to be built around the need to protect free speech and not to have permits, but there needs to be clarity in the code. And the more we weigh it down with language that people can understand, the less we're going to protect free speech. So let's do it right. And it seems to me that you've got some real problems with the way in which the University Assembly did not post this, and the fact that there isn't a calendar month, according to your bylaws, or actually this is the charter for the University Assembly to get a calendar month for review and response for campus code of conduct changes. And we've heard that people are really not clear on what it means here. So I really don't see how you're going to vote on something when there's this level of ambiguity and this level of procedural error.
Yes.
I'd just like to respond to the posting question. So the University Assembly generally doesn't release an agenda until the day before the meeting. We rarely are able to post all the materials on the website, but that's why we provide a public information list that anybody in the community can sign up to receive notice of University Assembly business. So by that standard, every University Assembly meeting doesn't provide the required notice. The second thing I would say specifically about the comment period is the rules do not require a two-week comment period. They recommend a two-week comment period, and they specifically allow for that to be shortened without limitation when there's a practicality issue, which the committee leadership did consider.
That's right, Mitch.
I'm very concerned about the lack of the public comment period. I do know that the CJC did reach out to members of the community, and there was a limited dialogue about this, and I appreciate the work that the community did, but I know that it is recommended. I don't think necessarily that just 24 hours notice is good. The GPSA says there that says this is good for 72 hours before our meeting. But I think that the lack of commentary is troubling because this is an important discussion point for the university. If this does not come back up until the next University Assembly session, starting in the fall, I think that's okay. I doubt there's going to be that many protests May to August. Not that that should be a determining factor, but something to consider in the real world. So I feel very strongly that this needs to be a better public process, public input process.
Thank you, Mitch. Next, Liz.
I move off for the orders of the day, which include a presentation from transportation, really quick before we go back to discussion.
The order of the day has been.
So I'm going to go get them in case I can inside.
Okay.
Can we have time for that?
The order of the day has been called. The order of the day is to have a presentation by Jill Lally on parking rate changes. Is there any dissent to calling this order of the day? There has been dissent. I guess that's that. So voting on moving to the order of the day, all in favor of listening to the presentation by Joe Lally, please raise your name card.
In favor.
Three. In favor. Yes.
Right now.
Two, three.
Yeah,
four. Okay. Will the assembly please raise your name card at this point if you are in favor of letting Joe Lally speak? Oh my God. Okay. All that opposed? all that things, yeah. So we will proceed with the order. Sorry. We will proceed with the order of the day, having Joe Lally speak about parking rates and changes at this point.
How many minutes?
15 minutes.
Can I motion to limit his time to 10? Joe, nothing personal. I really can't wait to hear about parking rates.
The motion is to limit Joe Lally's presentation to 10 minutes, seconded by Bob. All that, is there anybody opposed to the proposed motion? Is there any opposition to the proposed motion? I hear none. Joe, you have 10 minutes. I'm sorry, but...
This is just so that you're not sitting in the hallway while we're in here chatting.
First of all, I'd like to introduce my colleague, Amy Ross, who head of the Information Transportation, and we're talking a bit today about what we're promoting for the coming fiscal year. Our goal is to continue to try to simplify the rules by reducing the number of permit types. A big change that's proposing for the coming year is for short-term parking, introducing pay-by-sell. One of the features is that when you secure a parking spot, it's charging a lot of time. You can typically get a text message or an email and renew it from your cell phone or from your iPad or whatever device you have to do that. Improve the wayfinding and the signage, and really working to simplify the visitor parking and guest parking. For staff permits around the perimeter areas, we're continuing to reduce the number of permits. We're trying to get down to 4 in the coming year. And that, among other things, will help increase mobility around campus. We are intending to discontinue the access pass. That's a pass that we actually pay a disproportionate share of the subsidy for employees right high over transit. It's a completely manual process, and those routes are served by TCAP. So we think, while we're still dealing with some questions, this is going to be a good thing for us. We are also discontinuing active reports of van pools. Ithaca is an entertainment area which seems to meet air quality standards. You go to other parts of the country like Northern Virginia or California, and people would pay hundreds of dollars to participate in a van pool every month. Here, to the charge, it just hasn't worked out. The TCAT administers this for us. We're going to continue to support what we have. And see if we can explore better use for the funds that we're currently spending for van pool. A big change, particularly in direct response to requests from the graduate student organization, is the discounted student commuter permit. This will allow students to buy a D-Lot permit at staff prices. They can also then buy an OmniRide pass if they wish. We think it will also provide a long-term parking option for people who live in Solitown. And it replaces what we call the B-plus pass option that you can sell for $725, where we force you to buy an OmniRide pass. Student transit, no changes, and there's no fee increase for the $200 annual cost of that. We did make a change this past year where students who matriculated in spring in the past, if they only got a pass for the spring semester, now it's good for 2 semesters for the entire year. And the Hasbrook and Maplewood Parker continue to get no fee on the right privileges. We're working with the visitor experience team to improve parking. You know, when people come to Cornell to visit, there's really 2 things they need to do first. One is find the parking spot, the second thing is find the restroom. So we're working with the visitor experience there, and I'm talking just more about our pay by sell option. So we'll be able to find parking lot locations over the web. We're working with a company called Park Local. We're pretty excited about this. We think it'll be good, and there'll be 24/7 short-term parking options available too. Again, we're trying to improve wayfinding. If our capital budget is approved for this year, we'll be hiring the same consultant that's doing the wayfinding sign study for the Cornell New York Tech campus. So we'll have some consistency across campus. And certainly one of the reports we got out of the visitor experience team was our need to improve all signage and wayfinding on campus. So that's one of our goals, to make progress on that in the coming year. The permit areas, will continue to have no fee parking for A-Lot and E-Lot. It's not up here, but I will tell you there's no change in the faculty emeritus parking program. Perimeter lots, again, reducing the number of permits. Mid, central, we have a number of student permits, and then there's some other, mostly departmental permits that are down, just like down here. While this looks like a lot, I must say we're down to 650 permit types as of 3 years ago. So we're well under 100, and we're trying to simplify this so that we can understand it and you can understand it. The approved rate increases for this year, we're in year three of the 4 year phase in the EHOB and five in East Hill Plaza, and we're also in year two of the phase in for increasing department owned vehicle permits for perimeter rate. What we're talking about is essentially, other than that, a 2% fee increase across the board, not supposed to change. The violations, citations, here's the late fees, and there's no change to the lifetime motor service. I know you maybe were here 3 years ago, your life, I learned my lesson on that. So that's what the rate structure is we're proposing to go through. It's going to look like the current year structure, everything up by 2%, continue the payroll reduction option for employees. That's the history of our rate increases. The green line represents the average. So we had no increase last year. So that puts us right at about 2% average over the last 12 years or so. And the review process I've been going through, first of all, I've been taking care of my supervisor, Vice President of Compliance. So Facility Services is on board. We went to HR Council in March. We met with the Campus Infrastructure Committee of this assembly in March as well. Had a brief conversation in March as well with DCC Human Resources to understand any of the parts of the disaster. I'm here today to get your input. I'll skip limited, I suppose. And then I'm scheduled to present to senior staff on May 6th. And assuming that there's just minor adjustments that we need to make based upon your feedback, this will be implemented effective July 1st.
Any questions concerning the feedback for Joe Lally? Jim?
Only one. I do not understand why Cordell has to be Cordell as prosecutors for department leaders. It's a political issue, but I don't see why we're doing that.
It is a dysfunction in the enterprise.
Any other questions or discussion? Tanya?
So I'm sure this is probably short notes and everything, but I'm sure that the EA would love to hear about this, particularly since you're going to senior staff. Employees haven't had very good raises in the past several years, and I think 2% and the outcome of the health increases and all of that is really important.
Any other discussion? I hear none.
I would say that we've worked hard to keep the rates in light of that concern.
Mitch, do you have anything?
Yeah, so the park in the lot of all of them.
Yeah.
Does the college count being considered as a commuter?
I have a lot of campus.
And I would still plug in. I know we've been submitted to use for the strategic plan, but I am still waiting and hoping that we can have a serious reconsideration of the parking rate as we're in Maplewood. The driving special students live there, pay $725 right now, and they are residents there, they have families there, and it is a fairly large amount to park. And from their perspective, it's a parking lot in their park. I know it's different in the universities. There's campus life way over here, and you guys way over here. I understand the distinction. But from that student's perspective, from my constituents, they walk out their front door, they walk in their car, they don't realize that when they set foot off of the curb line onto the street or onto that parking lot, they get cross enterprise.
Well, when you get back to the call, I would hope that you give us a call because we want to continue that discussion. And this has been, over the last 3 years, been a process of incremental change. So I'm still open for discussion.
Any other discussion from the UA members? All right. Jill, do you have any further points?
Feel free to contact me if you have questions or ideas.
All right.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you, Joe. thank you. We will now move back to the discussion of Resolution 9. I don't know if Mitch had any more left. I think he has like three.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, did we finish with Greg? Greg, did you finish speaking?
I didn't
talk. Okay, yes. Okay, Liz?
I yield my time to Greg.
Greg.
So this is a complicated issue, and I really understand, and I appreciate everybody who's here trying to voice that, and I really get that. I get that there's other folks that want to come to the table but not have yet had the opportunity to come to the table. What I think is interesting, though, is the tactics of those that oppose this resolution. Because as we were going through the process, there was no discussion when it felt like the conversation was going in the direction of an opposing proposal for this need for public comment. There was no go to the bylaws, go to the charter. But then something had come out of committee that I think conflicts with the intent of those that originally wanted to see change. And I remember several members of the community that were in that meeting saying, you know, I want to see there say no permit needed in the code. If that's all we get, that's fine. So I think it's interesting now that we're muddying the water in a way with some procedural issues that otherwise weren't expressed when the conversation was going a different direction. So that's just one. Just needed to say that. And I think if we leave the code as is, I just want to remind everybody that there is a big gap that's created. And the early part of the fall semester, for students who want to protest, if that need does arise, there is going to continue to be the same uncertainty or unclarity that's in the code. This code does something where it says no university permit is required for such outdoor activities. I think that's a really important thing to remember, so that when students come back, they don't have to wait for SPJC to assemble, they don't have to wait for the comment period, they don't have to wait for all these steps, which will basically take them until the end of the fall semester. So fall semester for protesters on campus will be just as unclear as November 19th. This takes language that says there appears to be no need and makes it no university permit is required. So I think we need to consider that in the fairness to those that are protesting and counter-protesting throughout the fall semester, that if we don't act now, there's going to be much more confusion when we go into the fall. So, and I want to throw it out there, if we make change and there's some earth-shattering revelation from the faculty committee that we can open this subject back up at the next UA next year and make changes again. But I think what we have here allows for students in the fall to really come back and engage in some protests and do as they please with more clarity, even though there's some questions around just how clear it is. I think it's much clearer than what currently exists. So I want to throw that out there in the interest of folks who will want to protest and have counter-protest next year, that if we leave it as is and don't do anything, the folks are still going to act in a manner with a reasonable time. Please, I'm done. Okay. Yeah. I'll shut up.
Thank you, Greg. Just to clarify, each UA member have two speaking privilege times, limited at 3 minutes each. Mitch, you have already used up two of your speaking privileges. If anybody would like to yield their time to you, they could do that. We will now move on to Tanya. Oh, well, do you have any other?
Yeah, so, but what I wanted to I just wanted to reinforce that. And I guess, Mitch, I don't know if you had something to say, if you wanted to say something, but I'd like to defer my time to Chief Kathy Zoner.
Okay.
I'd like to defer my time to you.
Okay, thank you. A couple things I wanted to address an earlier speaker session that anyone was asked to leave. I think the UA is best informed that no person with the authority to do so asked anyone to leave. Amplify the Sound was asked to stop for our prior precedent in the discussion fund. There's no complaint out to any investigative body of any fees with conduct on November 19th. It's being raised in a manner in which we can't address it. and I would just not be part of the discussion until any realized it was a formal complaint. I disagree with the Burns here, not with handled, but the parties are certainly, multiple parties are very unhappy on how it was handled, but I disagree with that it was mishandled. And that the permit is, the use of the owner's property, here to before referred as the permit, is interpreted currently as rental of a plot of space. There are multiple spaces on the plaza. Protests and counter-protests have historically been addressed by establishing time, place, and manner to increase the safety of all, creating distance between protesting and counter-protesting, and they're working with other restrictions to add to it. That's all I can say.
Thank you. Our discussion time have actually been fulfilled and maybe exceeded. Is there a motion to extend the time of discussion on Resolution 9?
A motion to extend the time by 30 minutes. And hopefully will be less than that.
Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Any opposition to that motion? There is opposition. So any all in favor of the proposed motion? All that opposed? One. All that thing? Zero. We will extend time of discussion on Resolution 9 by 30 more minutes. I will now call for any other any speakers that wish to be on the speakers list. Peter, you're already on. Jim, you're next, and Ron. Is there any other members that wish to be on the speakers list?
Point of information, would a UA member have to recognize or re-recognize a member of the community in order to let them have a chance to speak?
Ari?
I would say it depends. If they are yielding their time, they can just yield their time. I don't think any further action is needed. But if they want to add somebody to the speakers list, I think it would be unanimous consent of two-thirds of members present, and hopefully with a 30-minute window, unanimous consent would be easy to do.
Okay. Do anybody from the community still want to speak?
I want to speak.
Okay.
do anybody want to be on it?
I motion to add Rachel to the speakers list.
Second.
Is there any dissent to adding Rachel to the speakers list? There is none. Rachel will be on the speakers list. Is there any other members that would like to be on the speakers list? The speakers list is now closed. We will proceed with Jim.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Fundamentally, the CJC was asked to look at the question of confusion as to whether a permit was or was not required, precipitated by the events of Pulse Plaza. We looked at it. We saw that the code had some lack of clarity. President Scorton wanted this look at. He came here. We did that. We then discussed, do we need to hear the report out from the faculty senate, the Mingles report, and all that other stuff. And as we got into it, we looked at it that we have very, very broad consensus and strong feelings personally that free speech needs to be protected, and whatever we did was to do no harm. Okay? And so we went about attempting to clarify the code so that we could clarify this permit issue. Is required, not required, optional. In reference to Randy, we did start this conversation a long time ago, and we talked to a lot of the vocal stakeholders, the JAA and people like that, but broad community, meaning rank and file students, stuff like that, I don't know if they were pulled in the list they were looking for. I think that we have met perhaps the technical requirements of our charter to vote on this today, but this is a very large issue with a lot at stake, and I don't think that we should, personally, I don't think we should hold to that. I think this is not needed to go, have an absolute vote today, because there have been doubts cast. Whether it's due to tactics or other things, I don't know. I'm concerned that the broader community comment has not been fully heard. While I don't necessarily personally want to wait for the faculty senate report for what this resolution does, which is explicitly clarify the permit, not maybe not just me blanking, but clarifies that, I think that that would trigger that broad community involvement. I think there will be reaction to it. I think you will hear from the public that we have not heard from, and perhaps see whether there's other things that need to be done. These kinds of incidents are rare. I don't think we're in danger of next fall having so many protests and the snowballing to increase. It's possible, it's a risk, but I really don't think it's a crisis. I do think this will be reintroduced, and respectfully, I will vote against this amendment today when it comes up to voting for the application. Not because I don't believe in it, not because I don't believe that it does exactly what we intended, but because there's broad community involvement today to cast doubt as to whether we've got it rightly targeted, and there's a broad feeling we need to wait for more input.
Thank you, Jim. Peter?
Sure. So, when this issue originally came to the PJC, I was faced with the issue of balancing safety, which is probably my number one priority in my life, with freedom of speech, which is also incredibly important. I'm a very expressive person, and I haven't actually participated in protests on campus. I would feel the desire to, if I ever wanted to, I would absolutely participate in one. And I'm unsure that this current proposal solves the issue that if somebody with a UUP and a protest to that event with the UUP comes up, that the people that do not hold that permit per se will be asked to leave or they will be permitted to stay. I don't know the answer to that question. And I don't think that this answers it. Well, it does say that there is no need for, no university permit is required. It also stipulates time, place, and manner regulations. and it confuses me. I don't know. Do we need, what if somebody just pops up on the plaza with a pop star, let's say, right? They didn't need a, that was protesting something. They didn't need a UUP. I don't know. I'm just really confused by this whole process. And I've been a part of this discussion. So I think we absolutely need to keep this conversation going a little bit longer. And you know what? I'm going to go ahead and motion to table this.
Are you motioning to table this indefinitely?
Yes.
This language then can for point of information or clarification, I don't know if you want to vote. So that means that this language can never then be reintroduced in its current form if it's tabled indefinitely.
You want me to answer?
I do.
We got the book.
I was asking the chair.
Do you want me to answer
that question?
Yes. Okay. Yes, please.
If it's tabled indefinitely, there has to be a separate motion to take it off the table. And I believe both require a majority vote. So basically, it won't be brought back on the agenda unless there's...
What about next year?
As I said before, it would have to be reintroduced. It would have to be brought back to the CJC. It would be a new resolution. Even if it was the same text, it would have to go through the whole process again.
Mitch.
I'm not entirely positive that your question was answered. So can we reintroduce the exact same language because it's another session, essentially, next year?
Because it's another session, it would be reintroduced, it would be a different resolution number.
Right, it could be the exact same.
But it would have to be committed to CJC.
Right.
There would have to be a comment period.
But it could be the same exact text reintroduced.
Of course.
So the motion is to table the resolution 9 indefinitely. All in favor? Is there a second?
Can we have a discussion on the resolution?
Isn't there a lot of opportunities for dissent?
Okay. Just one second.
Second. Thank you.
It's not debatable, so it's whether to table or not.
This is not debatable, so it's
because it's a point of privilege.
So this will not have any discussion. It's either yes or no to tabling this. So we will now vote on whether or not the table.
Well, the point of privilege means he has a question about procedure, basically. So.
Oh, who said that? Oh, he did.
Sorry. It's a relatively complex issue. And if we have a little bit of time that we've already designated to review it. And what we need, I think, to do is to proceed is actually to think critically about the implications of this revolution now or in the future. On the side of some community members, I mean, one man's bake sale is another man's protest. If you set up a whole plaza to raise money for refugees and, let's say, a war-torn country, and someone opposes that, they can come and restrict your getting a place. So there needs to be some sort of
Wrong. I need to stop you right here. This is not a question of privilege.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say is if we have time to go through some issues, then we can clarify.
I understand. Unfortunately, that's not a question of privilege. If the assembly vote to not table the discussion, you will have a chance to speak your part. So the motion in question right now is to table the resolution indefinitely. So we will now vote on this motion. All in favor of tabling this resolution indefinitely? 6. All that opposed?
5.
Let's do all opposed again. That's 6. Okay. All abstaining?
1.
And the tiebreaker.
And the tiebreaker.
I vote to table this discussion indefinitely until next session, and we can introduce this next time.
Yeah.
I really hope I made the right decision.
Motion to adjourn,
seconded. I now adjourn the meeting at 6:16 p.m. Tuesday, April 30th.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.